All right. Moving on to item 7. This is our scheduled information item on the retirement process. I'm looking to see who has joined us yet on this.
And today, Bree Wilkins, one of our retirement services supervisors, will be walking through the slide deck with the board.
Great. I see Bree has joined us. She's on mute, but she has now joined us. And she's sharing her screen. So Bree, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you. Tim's here with me too.
Good morning. We were asked to go through the retirement process overview. This was a carryover item from the December meeting.
Yes.
As far as the recommended steps that we would make to someone contemplating retirement, or even when they start with Sisera, looking at slide number 2, is going through the Sisera overview. Prior to the pandemic, this was a presentation that was done live. We did it on site as well as with various employers that requested it. At the beginning of the pandemic, this was actually converted and is now available online on Sisera's website. It contains a lot of good information, and I'll go through that in just a moment. We also recommend for members that are within 5 years of retirement to attend one of our pre-retirement workshops. These are well attended. And again, previously they were done live in our conference center at our office. Now they're done virtually, and we just converted those over to Zoom. We also recommend, third, getting a retirement estimate so the member or the upcoming retiree knows what to expect. And we recommend requesting it 6 months to 1 year prior to retirement. Due to the volume that we handle, we limit it to 2 estimates per year and within 5 years of retirement. We've had cases in the past where people or members were 30 years old and they're asking for, you know, a retirement estimate for the year 2040. So we limit it down to individuals that use it. Right now, we're getting a high number of estimate requests coming in for March 31st, which is really not unexpected since that's when we hit a spike in retirement, our retirement date, as well as we offer counseling appointments. They can be done in person or via the phone or via, you know, virtually. And again, we recommend that someone go through that process 60 to 90 days prior to retirement or when they're submitting their retirement application to go through the application, make sure they understand it. The dates are the dates they intended on the form, as well as a review of documents we may have and documents which we still need. In addition, going back kind of to the first one with the Sisera overview, there is the online calculator.
Hey, Tim?
Yes.
Tim, hold that thought for a second. Jerry, you had your hand up. Sorry.
Yeah, it's. I was going to bring it up later, but I think you touched on this already. Here's a softball question for you if you're talking to Gail about staffing. You talked about a normal seasonal uptick in March, which I've seen before, but the most recent information that Gail sent out about retirement requests at the end of the year and at the beginning of this year already seems to suggest more than a normal seasonal uptick. Are you adequately staffed? Do you have enough bandwidth, do you think, to handle the increased number of retirement requests that we're getting now?
Fortunately, the board approved 2 additional retirement counselor positions when the 2022 budget was approved, which is a very positive. In the last month, or in 2022, it's hard to get that to keep thinking 2021 because we're doing processing. I have had a senior retirement counselor retire. The challenge we have is finding the talented individuals that have the skill set and the aptitude to perform the job. Being a retirement counselor on the active side is a very complex endeavor. And it does take a high level of training and time, kind of on the job training, calculating estimates to become competent before they can move on to finals. So
that's, if, by my count then, excuse me for interrupting, you have one counselor who's going to retire and you have two approved positions. Does that mean you have, or will have shortly, three vacancies you have to fill? Or up to
three? I do have three vacancies that the position was posted initially the last week of December. And due to the low volume of candidates or applicants, as well as meeting the qualifications for the position, we extended it for an additional 2 weeks, and it just closed last Friday. And we'll be reviewing those applications. We do have a few internal candidates, which is good, but they would need to go through the app. They were technicians, but they need to go through the interviewing process. Like any of the other applicants, we were very fortunate during the pandemic that we have brought on two new retiree counselors that are very good. And we believe they are going to be top performers in the very near future and calculating finals, which is the actual individuals that are retiring rather than estimates.
And if I could just add on to what Tim mentioned about recruiting, the counselor recruitment, we did actually extend to try and get a larger pool of candidates. We have had some recent issues with our recruitments, as a lot of folks and a lot of organizations are dealing with now as well.
Yeah, I mean, for the right person, it is a great job. And it takes a balance. It's somebody that's, you know, comes out, likes, I'm going to say, not overly analytical, but is numbers focused. Also likes to represent and meet with members. The retiree counselor position for actives is kind of the face of CICERA. So once we have a new member that has questions, it would go to one of those counselors. Individuals asking retirement questions, any type of inquiry, generally, unless it's a retiree, goes to this group. And so we have high hopes that we'll be able to find good applicants to fill the three open positions that we currently have. But we are, you know, we're juggling our resources to maintain the volume and keep the work going. You know, I'd say Bree's doing a great job managing it. We're tracking it pretty much on a daily basis. However, we have noticed, and we'll talk about numbers later, but, you know, I believe when the pandemic started, we were probably running maybe about 400 retirement applications coming in a year. In 2021, we were approaching 500 applications. Almost a 25% increase in retirement applications coming in. And that is one of the reasons why we asked the board to approve the two additional positions, because we don't see it changing.
All right, thank you. Excellent info.
We have the online calculator, which, so the individuals that may be further out, like the one I mentioned, somebody that's 30 years old and they're asking for an estimate for the year 2040, we have an online calculator and a tutorial they can use for that. If they have additional questions, they can always call in and speak with a counselor to get assistance on how it works, as well as CICERA sends out annual benefit statements to all of its members. And that also contains a lot of great information for them, as well as benefit projections. Going on to slide 3, the CICERA overview. It will provide general information on, you know, what a lot of individuals that come in are familiar with defined contribution programs. And as like Gail mentioned about our Sagittarius people and defined benefit plans and educating them, we do a comparison of what a defined benefit plan is in comparison to a defined contribution plan. We'll review how a benefit is calculated, the various tiers. And the reason we'll go through all of the tiers is this could be new members that were PEPRA, as well as legacy members that view the information. We also discuss how the program is funded and where they can find their contribution rates on our website, which is available to them. We'll discuss vesting and how final average salary is calculated in determining their benefit. We'll talk about, it talks about service credit, various types of purchases that can be made, as well as it touches on reciprocity. On slide 4, the pre-retirement workshop goes through that information, but what the pre-retirement workshop really dives into is each attendee is provided two different estimates based upon the dates they selected. And the presentation, which is done by Bree and another one of our senior retirement counselors, they'll go through a detailed review of how a retirement benefit is calculated. They provide the attendees with a worksheet that they can view and see where the information is derived from, whether how their final average salary is being calculated, how their service is being calculated, that any purchases they made are highlighted, as well as the age that is being used. Time is also spent on defining pensionable compensation and getting to the final average salary. Since this group is getting closer to retirement, we'll go through the benefit options, the unmodified option, which is calculated on their estimate, as well as options 1 through 4 and what they mean and who is an eligible beneficiary. The retirement application processing timeline and what to expect is reviewed, along with the checklist that each attendee, or actually retirement application will receive, the applicant signs. We'll also touch on in that presentation the next steps, you know, the review of the required documents, you know, whether it's the birth certificate, social security cards, and so forth, and that the member does not have to wait until they're going to retire to provide that information to CICERA. They can provide it at any time. A lot of members following the session come in with some of their legal docs, which is a great assistance. And then part of the presentation also includes county benefits coming in and doing a presentation on their retiree medical benefit eligibility. And then we have the retiree organizations, AFSCME, RSG, and CRA, talk about their organizations.
Tim, quick question for you. In terms of the pre-retirement seminars, I guess for lack of a better term, workshop, I'm sorry. In terms of those, are those filmed?
No.
They're not filmed. And we have discussed actually doing it similar, or doing a version similar to the overview, where the core information is included in a presentation. One of the biggest values that comes from the pre-retirement workshops is the attendees have an opportunity to ask questions throughout the presentation regarding the information. And it's starting that interaction, which is really valuable. But it's similar to a PowerPoint presentation with speakers at this time.
So what I was thinking, and I had not gone back through the website to be able to answer the question I'm going to ask you is, but I was thinking if the workshops were filmed, preserved, you could have resources available to members on the website, which, you know, are in the form of podcasts that a member can sit and watch the workshop. You might have discrete topics covered sort of the recurring questions that, that maybe tie up staff in terms of member interactions, which they could get, you know, potentially an answer to by being able to access an online tool. Any thoughts along those lines? Good idea, bad idea?
No, I think we have thought about it. It's something I can, you know, with Bree and Christina and Gail that we could look at. I, like I said, we've discussed it. The interesting part is that the questions that come up from session to session, you think there would be consistency? The questions go all over. I mean, one session may be what questions on what purchase is.
Yeah.
The next session, they're talking about options, and it's hard to really gauge where the questions are going to come from or the topics. However, we probably could look at some of the prior ones and boil them down to kind of consistent, you know, consistency. And if a member during the session asks more of a personal question, that would be to their unique situation. In a lot of cases, some, like, for example, Central Sand had some unique benefits. We would take that offline with them, and it would not be covered with the group just because of confusion related to it.
Right.
But I think anything that we can do to get it education and tools in their hands would be beneficial. We've done workshops, not internally, but out in the, say, at the employers or at various departments on going through the retirement checklist, as well as how to fill out the retirement application and the documentation required as just a general educational session for a department or a division.
Well, you know, it's easy for guys like me to sit in armchair quarterback this thing, but I mean, I have not gone through the website to see what the tools are, but there may be opportunities. All I'm going to suggest is that there may be opportunities to address key items, recurring items. And again, maybe we're already doing this in the form of FAQ responses, but in any expansion of that, that might involve, you know, persons being able to access at their leisure, at home, a podcast of a retiree workshop, or subsets of those that delve into particular recurring questions, where we might have what I would call a master or an FAQ response to that, might have benefits in terms of workflow and demands on staff time. So just throwing that out there for thought.
No, we'll discuss it. Like I said, we're looking for anything that can assist us. One of the doing the presentation portion is generally not the labor intensive portion of this, because Bree and Elise are very experienced on the presentation and anticipating the questions that are going to be asked. But probably the most labor intensive portion is preparing two estimates for every attendee and getting them that information so they get the most value out of the workshop, so they can follow along and see where they are. That's most likely the most consuming portion. And when we get later into the presentation and we talk about, Sagitech or the new pension administration system, if we get to the point where a system is able to accurately prepare estimates, it would take, again, a lot of that burden off of the staff that does them currently.
Okay.
Just one other quick question. I'm sure it appears six different times, so forgive me for raising this issue, but on those written estimates, can you confirm what I suspect is already the case, that there's probably some disclaimer that suggests that these figures are only as good as the day they were put together based upon the benefits and expectations, et cetera, and may differ at some future date? I'd love to see. I'm sure that this time already exists. If it doesn't, I hope it does.
It does. So our letters that we mail out to the member does state that. And if we email the estimates to the members, then we do have a disclaimer we put on the email as well.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, that was key information to have, because, like I said, it's based upon what we know at the time or in some cases when not part of the workshop, but when estimates are done, some individuals will ask, say, instead of calculating my final average salary at $5,000 a month, use $7,000 a month because I think it's going to go up between now and then. We'll do the calculation, but it's all just, you know, the disclaimer and very made very clear that we're basing the information on data provided by the requester.
Good.
So next, I'm going to talk about retirement estimates. The things that we review and validate when we complete a pre-retirement estimate. So we do always do an audit of the salary and the differentials and adjustments. If they've had any pay adjustments, then we do reach out to the auditors and verify what time period that covers. Sometimes they'll get large adjustments for, you know, a back pay that they never receive. So we have to make sure that those fall within the final average salary period and we're not including too much earnings. The eligible differentials is getting easier now. Before they would always ask for with or without certain differentials. And now we have been able to move away from that. So that does help. We do refer to MOUs for any future salary increases, but those are the only salary increases that we generally include for members. We don't look at step increases or anything like that because we don't know when their step increases will happen generally. We do their sick leave accrual. We do it based on reported by the employer. So the county or the district has reported it to us. We do not project out on that either. We just use what they currently have. We do audit all of the service credit and salary information, including the contributions, any purchases or conversions. We review all of that. When we do the estimate, make sure that the service credit is correct, that they didn't miss any time back in time or currently. If they're out on leave, then we do verify what contributions were actually missed, and any purchases that they have done in the past, we make sure that they were posted correctly and that we are including all of that time when we do an estimate. If the member requests the inclusion of a purchase or a salary, pay rate change, position change, we have been known to do that. We try not to do that. If they want to see, the most popular is seeing how much the purchase will add to their pension. So we do that quite a bit. If they buy a public service or their temporary time, how much that would increase their pension by. We also do the calculation for them to see how long it would take them to recoup the cost of making that purchase, just so they know how many years it would take them and if it's beneficial for them to purchase that or not. So that does one of the things that we do for them as well. We have been known to get people to call in about position changes. And, you know, if they're, I know in some of the safety positions, if they change to certain different titles, then their differentials change. So they'll want us to see how that would affect their pension and if they should change positions or not. We try not to do that just because it gets very convoluted and going back and forth between the two. But if they really want it, we can try and work with them on that. But those are some of the things that the what if scenarios, they want to know what will happen if the, you know, if their salary changes or anything like that. We always calculate and review missing contributions, especially the first contributions. If they've been missed, that is something that they have to pay prior to retirement. So we always want to make sure that we are updating those costs for them and mailing out those letters. Since the interest continues to occur on that, we want them to know about that and be able to pay that prior to getting to retirement and suddenly have to pay that back to us.
Question. Sorry, sorry to interrupt you, but it was on my mind. So in terms of these types of questions that are the ones that seem to be of great interest to employees and probably require
thoughtful response by staff, particularly in terms of the what ifs, like, well, what if I do this, or what, you know, what if I have a position change, or, you know, what if I buy service credit, or what have you. Looking into the future, and I don't know if this is also a Gail question, but looking into the future is the ability once we transition to a different pension administration system, is our ability going to include an online tool that, rather than have you all fielding these questions ad hoc, that a member will be able to go in and using those tools, change a variable, whether it's position change, salary change, I want to buy, service credits and I want to buy X. Will they be able to do that under the updated pension system that would obviate the need for these individual interactions to take place?
I would say it's interesting that you asked the question now over purchases, because we're just starting a review of the purchases module, started on Monday or Tuesday of this week. The plan is that information could be available to them. So they would be able, today when you go into the calculator, it's basically the same. We all see the same calculator and it's not unique. The vision would be going forward, once the data and Sagittech is up and running and the functionality is correct, would be that the person would have employee or a member, say, self-service or a portal that they can go into that would be unique to them and could provide those opportunities to do the calculations. It still, in some cases, may require Sasera to do the initial calculations, but then they can make it viewable to the member.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, and I don't want to derail you. I'll let you get back to your presentation, but I'm just thinking that in terms of what reflects state of the art, that strikes me as reflecting, maybe the state of the art. And we hear anecdotally from employees about what other systems have or the capabilities they have, and it appears at least a theme that I'm getting from employee interactions is that other systems with potentially newer pension administration systems have that ability for members to kind of go in and work toggles to figure out by doing something or making a change how it affects them individually without having to interact with staff at the system. I understand the consequent risks, I think, or at least I think I do, with that, but it strikes me that has a lot of benefits, and I think it sounds like we're pursuing that, but I would encourage us to in fact do that, because it seems to me to be, if not the required direction, the direction things are going.
Yeah, I think we all agree, and what we have seen so far this week, we're looking at it from the Sasera side. The functionality is available for Sasera, internally to do the calculations, including interest, repayment options, and so forth. And we can make it the option to make it available to the member. I have not seen the estimate module yet. I would guess that it would be able to provide that flexibility. And again, I think as Jerry mentioned, with disclaimers,
right,
that it's only as good. I mean, we have a lot of people our members make purchase requests and we never hear from them again, or we may hear from them when they're about to retire 5 or 10 years later. And instead of the purchase being $5,000, now it's $8,000. And they want to know what happened. And we have to go through and explain it to them. There's additional interest accruing, as well as individuals that are very sensitive to the interest dates. And when we come up to December 31st and June 30th, they're rushing to get their payments to us to not miss or be charged for an interest period. But I think the vision is the new pension administration system would offer that type of information and functionality.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping so too. I see Jerry has his hand up, but you know, and to the degree it's not clear or needs to be refined, that's something that in our interactions with the vendor, we need to push for, obviously. So Jerry,
yeah,
you had a comment.
Yeah, I promise I don't want to make this the disclaimer hour, but since I haven't seen the language, there was a comment by Brianna, which makes perfect sense to me, that the disclaimer touches on, this is only as good as the information provided by the retiree or potential retiree. I'm hoping it's a little broader than that, and I imagine it is, but just in case that it might have some suggestion that it's also based upon CERL regulations at the time the estimate was made, applicable legal decisions, whatnot, that stuff yeah. may change in the future. I hope it's just a little broader than
it,
that.
Yeah. It was written by legal, so
yes.
It's... Okay, then.
I think you already read the disclaimer. But Karen was involved with it, and the legal team on providing the language in the disclaimer to make sure we were, like I said, it's only as good as.
Yeah.
And what we know at this time and sections of the law and legal, you know, the legal requirements.
Okay. I hate to see the disclaimer longer than the estimate, but it has a certain amount of appeal for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. One of the last things we also look at when we're doing retirement estimates is marital status and the required documents. So if we have seen that somebody has been divorced since the last time we did an estimate, then we will remind them that we need their divorce documents and go over that whole process with them as well. So counseling appointments. During the counseling appointment, we do them in person right now by appointment only. We also will do them virtually by Teams or over the phone, whatever the member prefers. But during most of our appointments, we do go over the retirement calculation, how it was calculated, any questions that they have on those, and you know, any questions about purchases or any of that stuff. We do go over the required documents. So if they want to bring in any documents, we will make appointments for that, as well as the divorce documentation. We do go through reciprocity. So if somebody has reciprocity, we wanna make sure that they understand that and getting close to retirement, if they're turning an application with us, that they've also turned in an application with whoever they have reciprocity with, and then what that process looks like after the fact. We will start to go over their payment options with them, even though we may not have the final dollar amount, we will know who their beneficiary is. So we can go over what options will be available to them and what that means. And we also will sometimes have counseling appointments with them to turn in their options. So once they have received them, we can meet with them and go over those actual dollar amounts, answer any questions, and then be their witness to sign it if they need us to. And we also, our biggest right now appointments are for turning in retirement applications. So we do meet with them if they would like to come in and turn in their application, make copies for them, go over that timeline with them, make sure they have all their documents. If they don't have all their documents, we do highlight on the checklist what they still need and give them a way for them to get those to us once they have them. So this is our,
I'll say before you leave that section, what happens if somebody does not have a birth certificate? What do we then do?
We do take either a copy of a birth certificate or a passport is another document that we will accept. It doesn't have to be, it can be an expired passport if they don't have a active one right now, just because they haven't been able to renew them. And we have taken the real ID, since in order to get the real ID, you have to have your birth certificate or passport. So we have taken those on a case by case basis as well.
Have you ever run across one where you couldn't come up with an acceptable substitute?
Yeah, I mean, we do have individuals that are that can go back to the county of birth and request a copy of their birth certificate, so it could delay in the processing of their retirement application. The date of birth is critical, not necessarily, I'm going to say, in the CalQL, to be eligible to retire in the unmodified option, but it's critical in the calculation of the optional forms of benefit, as well as certifying the date of birth of any beneficiaries for those options, because it impacts the eligibility and the calculation of the benefit.
And we have gotten quite a few birth certificates that are from other countries, so they'll be in other languages and stuff like that. But we do still take those, and usually you can still at least see the date and understand the date and their name. But we do take birth certificates from other countries as well.
And if it is we're looking for, say, a birth certificate for a member, our system currently does have a date of birth in it, which was provided by the employer. And like Bree mentioned, with the foreign birth certificates, we're able to still verify back to the date of birth and the name of the individual.
Thank you. All right. Carry on.
Okay. So this is kind of the retirement application and calculation process. So they do submit their retirement application and all the documents. Once they have submitted that, we do notify their employer, and that whole time goes, then we let them know that as long as we have everything, they won't hear from us for a while until we're done with their calculation. We do send them the memo that we send to their employer as well, so they do get a copy of that. Then we are waiting for the employer to submit the final active payroll. And then that is when we can actually start our process once we have all of the final pay items. So we do kind of go over that with them as well, that it is important for them to get their application in a timely manner, because if they don't turn it in a timely manner, then their employer cannot process their final paycheck in a timely manner. And then that ties up things for even longer. The final retirement calculation is about 8 to 12 weeks after the final active paycheck. And then their options are usually ready within 1 week of us finishing that final calculation. And then their first pension check is about 1 to 2 weeks after we receive the options back from the member. Right now, a lot of that is happening online, so we are emailing a lot of the members their options. And they are printing them, signing them, and emailing them back to us. Just since our doors are not currently open, it's easier for us to be able to email them and them email us back. And then once we get that options back from them, then they go on the next available off cycle that we run. We currently run 2 off cycles a month. So they go on the next available one that we have available.
Question, at that pause. So I know that probably all of us on the board and it varying in degree have had a lot of questions from retirees on step one, which is the 8 to 12 weeks. Just quickly, can you provide us with why that time frame is as long as it is, with as much variation in it, and what, you know, short of changes in the system, which I know we're working on, obviously, what can be done to shorten that time frame?
So it kind of depends. I always tell members too that it does depend on the time of the year. You know, when we have March retirements and we're getting 170 retirements, and there's currently two counselors finals. You know, that does take a while for them to do those 170 finals. So the first piece of that is depending on when they retire, because with the county I use as my main example, just because that is 90% of our retirements that we do probably. Their final paycheck isn't till the 10th of the following month. So if they retire on, say, March 31st, their final check is April 10th. But if they retire on, say, March 10th, they're still not getting their final paycheck until April 10th, which is 8 weeks right there that we've already waited. And we kind of take that into account when we are looking at their time frame. But once they get that final check, it's a matter of waiting for the information to be in our system, the counselors being able to start working on it. So we say the 8 to 12 weeks. We try not to go that far, but that is our, you know, especially during March, that is, I think everyone was on payroll this last March by June at the latest. So most of them were the end of May. But it is, a lot of it is waiting for that payroll information to come into our system, as well as the staff being able to work on them.
Yeah. And then as far as the payroll coming in, you know, like in the example of the April 10th payroll, that is most likely not updated into our internal system until, what would you add?
Into
sometime during June,
so
before it gets into CPAS. And so there is the delay in a lot of those cases. So the process is not delayed. We will go into the county's payroll system, PeopleSoft, and attain the information ourselves so we can begin the calculations. But it's not in CPAS until, you know, it could be over 2 months later.
And once the counselor finishes their final calculation, it is reviewed by a supervisor. So currently that's Jerry and myself. Coming soon, that will just be myself. So it is reviewed by a supervisor after they're done with it as well, to verify that everything is accurate. So that does take a little bit of time as well.
And this also does assure that when a retiree is put on payroll, the benefit they are receiving is accurate and correct, that all of the contributions have been funded. In some cases, we need to refund some contributions based upon timing in the last month of employment if they're not getting that service credit. But very rarely, if ever, do we have to go back and change somebody's benefit amount. Now, this is excluding the on-call and those recent changes, but very rarely, due to the accuracy of the process, does a benefit amount need to be changed.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could piggyback on that as well,
sure.
As far as the time delay, a key part of that, as Bree mentioned, is when we receive the information from the county. You know, the county does payroll on a monthly basis. Some trustees might hear from other counties or other municipalities about, oh, well, I can get my, you know, my first retiree check 3 weeks after my last day worked. Well, you know, a key part of that is the county is on a monthly payroll, which does present its challenges. And we do have a number of manual processes that we have internally to help validate and make sure that the information is accurate and that we are paying the appropriate benefit. With the new system, you know, as we mentioned before, this is how things stand today. But with a new system, we are looking at the functionality of doing a check, you know, maybe like an 80% check or something like that in advance of, you know, getting the full amount so that they can start to receive a benefit quicker than they currently do. And also doing away with a lot of the manual double checking and a lot of the manual work that we're having to do currently. So that's something I think very important to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'm sensing the distant drumbeat of AI entering into the retirement realm, and it's kind of scary. But it sounded like Bree was mentioning that your ranks are going to be depleted by one of your two senior reviewers as well coming up. At least I heard that hint.
Yeah, other retirement services supervisor has been with us for a very, very long time. And she is looking at leaving. So, yeah.
Okay. Challenges. All right. Any other, I don't see any other hands up, so go ahead.
Okay. So the retirement calculation process is kind of just going over what I just talked about in the last slide, but cannot begin until after the information of the final active paycheck is received by SACERA. We do receive those through employer reports and also through requests to the employers. So we, besides the county, the other districts, we do send them a memo and ask for them to send us their information as well, and they'll send it to us on Excel spreadsheets. We do audit that information at this time. That we do audit the service time, contributions, purchases, conversions, the account splits, if they've had any account splits from the divorce, as well as the interest posting to make sure that that is all correct. We do go back to the employer and question things if we need to, and go back, you know, we'll go work with the human resources department for some of our districts or the auditors with the county if we do have questions on stuff. We do also verify at the time of retirement that we are using their highest 12 and 36 months of salary. We do look at that a couple different ways just to make sure that we are using their highest time. Sometimes our members will tell us that they had, you know, higher salary 6 years ago or something like that, so we know to go look for it. But we do always run a report in out of CPAS just to verify that we are using the highest salary. Generally, that is going to be their, you know, last 12 or 36 months leading up to retirement. But we have seen where it can be back in time as well. So on the final average, the retirement counselor calculates the retirement benefit, and then the supervisor or senior staff member can review those calculations. We also review the documents just to make sure that everything that we receive is correct and is what we need for that final. And then we run that final pension in our system, and it is verified that way as well. And then that is when our admin team will type up our optional elections for us, and we send those over to the member to be signed.
Okay, once the member receives their retirement option election, they can contact a SACERA retiree counselor, go through the various options if they would like a more detailed explanation. They may question in the pre-retirement workshop that four options were discussed plus the unmodified. Why do I only have two options or three options to select from? It also gives them an opportunity to talk about, you know, verify their beneficiary. They can sign the form on their own without this discussion and review. The form has to be witnessed and returned to SACERA. Ms. Bree mentioned earlier, the person can make an appointment to come into SACERA, meet virtually or via the phone to go through these questions and turn their form in. The member selects the payment option, signs the retirement option allowance, and then submits any other forms that may be missing. It could be a tax election form. If their direct deposit information was missing at the time, they can submit that information. But when we get to this point, the legal documents that we need to run the calculations have been provided. And I think if you've seen at each one of the board meetings, the majority of the options selected by our members is the unmodified option, which generally provides them with the highest benefit. And if they have an eligible beneficiary, a 60% continuance to that beneficiary. The member is placed on the next available off-cycle payroll process. When they get placed on the system for payroll processing, a retiree counselor updates that information in the system, and it is reviewed or confirmed, validated by another staff member for its accuracy. And we generally process off-cycles anywhere from 2 to 3 per month, when we start getting into the months of like May, June, July, where we're processing a lot of the March applications, we're doing more processes. In the month of November and sometimes in December, we only do one off cycle due to the holidays and the number of applications that are pending volume-wise. What can affect the timing of the initial paycheck? I think we've touched on a lot of this. You know, the member is responsible for providing the required documents. One of the biggest delays that we encounter is related to divorces. And in some cases, the applicant having to go back to the courts and get their final documentation. We do get a lot of comments. My former spouse does not get any of my benefit, but going through the divorce decree or the marital property settlement separation agreement, it must be specific. You know, it can't just say what's his is his and what's mine is mine. It has to be very specific on dealing with Cesera and specifically point that out. And then we have also had cases where individuals do not resubmit or provide their option election back to Cesera for one reason or another. We do follow-up with them to let them know, but it seems that every year there's a handful of people when we close the year out that for some reason or another are not submitting their option election to Cesera to get on payroll. The employer side of it is submitting accurate final payroll information to us. And we talked about the timing with the county and getting that information, which is the largest employer. Also, not that we're getting the information. In some cases, information shows up, adjustments show up on later files, cleaning up payroll questions, which would then impact the calculation of the benefit. And then we also have questions on some of the information that comes through. For example, we may see a pay code come through, they submitted as pensionable, and it's called adjustment. And it's for a dollar amount, and we can't identify it. We need to get the detail to find out what it pertains to. It may pertain to something going back a number of years that is being brought current, and only a piece of it is includable, or it's all excludable. That's all that detail has to be flushed out before we can proceed. And then as far as Cesera, you know, we're responsible for completing the calculations, researching the pay codes, the pensionability and possible enhancements taking place, doing the retirement options and getting them to the member for their signature, and then getting them onto payroll and paying them each month. And then if a reciprocal agency is involved, whether it's incoming or outgoing reciprocity, it's the sharing of that information. And in the case of PERS, it's just not giving them the final salary. We have to give them any MOU and pay code information detail so they can do their calculations. What can impact the timing of the initial pension check is meant, you know, we've talked about this, it's getting the required documentation. If we have to have a marriage certificate, if the person is married, to certify that information. I think John mentioned, you know, talking about birth certificates, social security cards, divorce documents, and then on tier two individuals, we need a current social security estimate. So if any member that has any piece of a tier two benefit has to provide a current social security estimate. You know, we do find that we do have members that retire during a divorce. That retirement calculation has to be delayed due to the fact that a pre-retirement divorce entails an account being split, not necessarily the benefit, but the services split, and it's rather than one benefit, it turns into two benefits, two separate accounts. For a post-retirement, it's a little different in that we're splitting the benefit on the payroll side. Could be another delay that we've encountered recently is missing contributions. Bree touched on the first contribution being missed in some cases. We also may encounter contributions being taken at the wrong tier level, that they were at a left at a tier level that the contribution was lower than it should be for the tier that they should have been in. And then again, the member delaying providing the documents, returning the option agreement. I'm trying to think, we probably have one individual at least that hasn't, I think it's the oldest one, probably it's been 4 or 5 years that has not returned the option election. They're aware, they know, they just refuse to turn it in.
Should we ask for proof of life?
Yes, because they call.
Okay. Well, someone calls.
Yeah. So we actually have them call. We also get sometimes where they can designate someone to represent them to get information. But a lot of it was tied to the lawsuit and disagreement with the lawsuit. So, but it's their choice.
So the employer responsibility, their processing and final paycheck and reporting to CICERA is delayed to the following month. So these are just kind of examples of when somebody, their last day of employment, when they retired, and then when we would get their final paycheck. So the payroll data that contains the pay codes, and the dollar amounts, sometimes that does require additional research if it doesn't make sense for how much a member has always been earning and suddenly they are reported as something else, then we will look into that and question that. So that does take time sometimes when we do have to look into their amounts that they were paid to verify that it is correct or if something needs to be corrected. And then if that final information that is given to us is not accurate and it needs to be corrected, then we do have to wait for that correction and for the employer to tell us what they should have paid. And in some cases, if they owe money to the employer, then we're waiting for them to pay that to the employer as well.
And then what can affect the timing of an initial check? You know, a lot of it is based upon the volume that comes in. We touched on during January, February, and March, we have a spike in applications that come in for that period with a March period date of retirement. We also have an, at the same time, estimate requests coming in. We'll go through some numbers on a later slide on the types of volumes, inquiries that have been received, as well as purchase requests. In some cases, you know, Scott mentioned, you know, do it. Some of these you can do that, you know, should be able to do it online with using the tool or the system. In a lot of the cases, I would say that would be a true case, and that's probably very, you know, possible. We're probably going to have that. In some cases, we do have some very complex purchase requests come in that have gone back, 17 years,
yeah.
And various broken pieces that come in that the information is not even in CPAS. We all have to go to microfiche to get information and things like that. But there are some, but again, there are probably more, I'm going to say, on the one-offs. But we probably do experience at least one of those a month that are very complex and go back for a long period of time. We also have some system functionality issues that pop up, frequent system errors when we're processing. We've been very fortunate since we've been in our new location that the system, as far as processing payroll, has been pretty good. The support provided by the IT team has been very good. They're very responsive. They understand when we go to process payroll, especially monthly payroll, it's all hands on deck and it has to happen. We do not want 10,000 people not getting paid and not being paid correctly. So they're very responsive during that, but issues are encountered during each one of our processes. The amount of time the system was taking to process was hours. At one time, it is now getting to a more reasonable expectation in the last, say, 6-7 months or so as issues have been identified. And then we'll have staffing issues, whether it's absences, attrition, the amount of time it takes to develop the talent to bring them online. It's quite a challenge in that area. A new staff member that comes in that has the aptitude and the skills, it would probably, they'd spend their first year doing estimates, learning purchases and responding to inquiries before they can move on to finals, which is getting the individual through the retirement process, as well as we have other projects that are, you know, come up that have to be responded to, whether it's the audit information request, and right now the new pension administration system, the same team or parts of the same team that process the payroll and process the retirement applications are also being counted on and relied on in participating in the develop of the new system, which is very important, not just for Sisera, but they have a high level of knowledge. It's next to impossible for all of us to experience all of the issues that come up. And the more individuals, more eyes and hands that we have on the project, the better, and it will be successful. And then we also have payroll data that contains pay codes or amounts which require additional research. Currently, I mean, previously, it was all of the various differential standby on call and so forth. Recently, it's been more over contributions, missing contributions, researching those, and the pay code that's labeled adjustment and getting the detail behind that that supports it.
So on the last slide, I would just make a quick observation that it seemed to me that bullets 1, 3, and 4 were essentially staffing issues. At least that's my interpretation from where I sit, that whether I don't know if you can put this prior slide back. I want to make sure I didn't misspeak, but an increase in the number of retirements, requests for estimates and inquiries and so on translates to we need enough people to handle the volume. That's my interpretation of that. Number 3, you've got absences, attrition, development. Again, level level and ability of our staffing. And then item 4, you know, if you've got codes or amounts that require additional research, to me, that translates to somebody has to do the additional research, right? It takes time, it takes resources. So my gut is, I don't know if we, I just making a general observation from a budgetary standpoint that, you know, it's, we may have to rethink the level of staffing required to carry out the mission in these areas. I mean, I could be wrong.
Thing I would on the 4th bullet, in a lot of cases, I would not relate that to an internal staffing issue. It's reliance on getting the information from the employer or the employer processing things correctly. And in some, you know, in some cases, there's delays on getting that information. And, you know, we may go to the county to get the information, but then they need to go to the department or to another group to get the final determination of what it is on the 4th one. Do you agree, Brie?
Yeah, definitely. It goes back to that part of it goes back to the employer more. So just waiting on them to give us that information. Sometimes with the county, I know they only keep records for so long and then they have to go, find the information in boxes, I believe. So sometimes that can definitely take them longer. And the districts, we've gone back and forth with, you know, some districts recently on different things. And so it's just more of just contacting them and waiting for them to reply. So.
But it's another thing to manage. It's something in the queue, yes. Right? Somebody has to chase it. I'm just getting out of the practical realities.
One of them is we go, we need clarification of what this is. They come back to us, and the response could be, I don't know. And then we have to go back again, and we have to flush it out until we get an acceptable response that would allow us to proceed. And so it's not like kind of a one and done. In a lot of these cases, there could be, five or six emails or correspondence going through to get a response and the clarity we need to proceed.
Got it.
Yes, Scott, it was the point I was making before. And if you've got three individuals who are now coming in effectively, or for lack of a better expression, newbies, and I'm also hearing that it takes maybe as long as a year to ramp these folks up to the point where they're handling day-to-day stuff. I mean, this is the most important contact point that any of our members will have, and that is when they're leaving. And so obviously we want to make sure that that's being done in timely and accurate manner as possible. So, it's on the radar screen for sure for me.
Yeah, and I agree, and we are looking at the workflow and various duties, as far as going to certain individuals, focusing, having pure focus on doing calculations of the finals. Because throughout the day, the counselor could be getting calls. They have an assigned portion of the active alpha, as well as an assigned portion of the retirement applications. And they have questions coming in from the actives. I want an estimate. I want to make a purchase. I just vesting, various questions coming in, as well as they're also focusing on doing finals. So we're evaluating the work assignments that would it be more productive to have active calls isolated or directed toward a certain population of the staff, and finals being calculated by a certain portion that are not addressing actives, but they have pure focus on processing, getting individuals on payroll as quickly as possible.
Okay. Challenge.
Thanks. Awesome. So another portion, if the member does not provide the required documents, obviously we can't do their final until they've given us what we need. Also, issues with the timing of the employer data posting to the system. The retirement calculations are manual. So we do them manually, and then we do process them in the system afterwards. So depending on if the employer information is in there by the time we process it, we do have to post stuff manually sometimes when we are doing the calculation. And then that kind of ties into the funding and interest. We need to make sure that the contributions and interest are all correct, especially if the member is going to choose the option one. We need to know what their account balance is at the time of retiring. And then the other thing is the delay in reciprocal agencies providing their information. CalPERS is pretty good about giving us their information. However, we do have to keep an eye on it because they are one of the systems that pays people up front and then adjusts their pension after the fact. So sometimes they will send us their salary information right away, and then we'll notice that it's for dates that do not lead up to the retirement date. So they're giving us their salary information based on what they currently have rather than waiting until they have all the information. So then we have to go back to them and say, do you have the final payroll information yet? And wait for them to get us that, just so that we can make sure that we have the final salary information rather than paying them on an estimate that CalPERS has calculated. So that is some of the stuff that we do look at when we are processing them as well.
All right.
This is me too. So we do encourage the members to provide their documentation, especially during the workshops. the newsletters that we send out, our website, and anytime we're talking to members, we always try and remind them that they can provide those legal documents to us at any time. We can put them in our system so that they're just on file, and then they don't have to worry about finding them at the time of retirement. And that includes going over divorce documents as well. The information to the employer's pay reporting and retirement process. We do have the employer handbook and the website, and we do meetings with employers, not necessarily anytime soon. We haven't done any, but in the past, we have done meetings with the employers and gone over processes with them as well as with the members. And also, we do provide written and verbal communication of any outstanding items that we need from the members. We will send them when we initially receive their application. If there's anything that is missing, we send them a letter right away, letting them know what is missing. And then we do send follow-up emails or more letters if they still haven't provided that stuff, just so that it is documented that we are still waiting on those items from the member. And then we do have additional resources available for quality assurance reviews. If we do have questions on things, we can ask other people to help us. And then when additional research is needed with particular pay codes, we can put people on payroll without including those if we need to, and then adjusting it later. We try to avoid that if at all possible with the system. With CPAS, it is harder to readjust members' pensions, especially more than readjusting them more than one time. So we try to avoid that if we can at this point.
Okay, hold on a second. Jerry, you had
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, obviously the pandemic has thrown a lot of sand in the gears. but one of the things that popped up in years past was the urgency, I think the critical need to meet with the employers. And I applaud the staff for having done as good a job as they did to try and make sure that we get these employer meetings. And now you had just a little chuckle in there, and I don't blame you for that, about not having done one recently.
Yes.
So I'm hopeful we can get that back on the radar screen too, because I think that's critical, making sure that the employers are kept up to date.
I agree. And, you know, hopefully we will be to a point at some time where we can start doing the outsourcing again of going, you know, we would always go to sheriffs for all of their new recruits and talk to them. And we did a couple things for Confire before, and the library, we would do a yearly thing with them. So I definitely think that that's helpful stuff. And hopefully sometime in the future, we will be able to get back to that. So, because it definitely does help.
Okay. In the future.
I can't predict anything. So.
Here, there's no date in there, but I'd sure like to suggest that it be on the board somewhere, the to-do list.
We always have it there, but again, we want to ensure the safety, health and safety of our staff, as well as a lot of the other departments, are not doing group, you know, having these group meetings during this time. A lot of them have suspended them. Like the library group was all anyone in that worked for the library. So it was, you know, quite a high number of people. Same thing with, was it the nurses?
Yeah, I don't have any metrics to prove this, but I can remember a day when there seemed to be a much higher volume of comments along the lines of, well, the group didn't understand that they were supposed to do the following. And those had dropped off, I think, precipitously. And I think it's due to you guys, the efforts. So hopefully we can get back to some sense of normal in the near future, because otherwise those are going to crop up again.
Yeah,
we would like that, because we find them very beneficial to get, you know, really get out in the field and talk
and,
with people.
Yeah, and I think it helps with the phone calls for our counselors as well. I think it helps reduce that. So,
you know, looking back to 2021, and some of these numbers are representative also to 2020. Well, when the presentation was put together for December, we had 435 service retirement applications that were processed. That number is closer to 400, was 481 by the end of the year. 1,400 retirement estimates were done in the first 11 months. I don't have the December number, but if we go with, it was probably closer to 1,500 or 1,600 for the year. For the first 3 weeks of 2022, we've already done 115 estimates. So they're continuing. We're getting a lot for March right now. Approximately 200 purchase requests were calculated, requested and calculated. Of those, less than 10% actually took action at this time to make the purchase. We had over 3,000 member inquiries come in. And then during the first 11 months, for the year, we did over 130,000 benefit payments were processed. And that was pushing, instead of $540 million, pushing up to $600 million. We're processing about $45 million to $46 million each month in benefit payments.
I see Candace has her hand raised.
Yes.
Candace. And I was just going to thank you for this very, very extensive presentation. I think it's really helpful for me, as I know it is for everyone, to just understand the really challenging process and obstacles you reach. And I think for most people, if they have that expectation in mind, you know, in starting from day one, when they first come to those seminars, that, hey, in reality, you're not going to get your pension immediately. You know, here's the timeline. I think that satisfies people. I think the people I've heard from, usually for some reason, and they must have missed it somewhere, were clueless that it should take that long. And so I think that's going to be really helpful. And even on the website, if we have under an FAQ, how long does it typically take to process? And if we say, you know, it can be anywhere from, you know, 60 days to, you know, what, infinity, if you don't turn in your papers, but you know, just sort of setting that expectation, I think we're going to hear far less from people, and probably you will too. So I think having that expectation set, and it sounds like at different steps we have been setting that, and maybe we just need to re-articulate it even more. But thank you. I think this has been very helpful.
Thanks.
Tim, I also wanted to add before you leave the slide, I have reporting that goes back to 2013, and if we include and the 21 numbers, December in 2021, Sisera received the highest number since at least 2013 of applications. And we've also processed the highest number of retirements last year. And, you know, when you think about everything that went on with the pandemic and with COVID, we actually had no staff leave retirement services the whole year. No one retired. No one, you know, I mean, very, very dedicated staff, especially when you think about the 23,000 members and beneficiaries that we serve, many of them frontline workers, you know, they know how important this benefit is to those folks. And so, you know, we really had very low turnover of staff across this area last year and in 2020. I just wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the hard work of Sisera and especially retirement services. It's a partnership between the departments, of course, because we also have member services that is loading the data from employers. And we also have, you know, accounting, paying out the benefits. And, you know, we have investments, making sure cash is ready and, you know, just a real partnership across the organization. So I just wanted to comment on those additional numbers and accomplishments that have been happening.
Outstanding. Yeah. It clearly retirement services had to step up. So this is impressive.
So some of the improvements we made over the last 2 years, we added a second supervisor to the department. And a technician as well. So we did fill that technician position. We did fill three retirement counselor positions over the last 2 years. We did add additional pre-retirement workshops. So we did have an additional number of workshops that we were doing this year. We have gone back to one a month. And then some months are blocked off just because of March retirements, but we did add to the number of attendees that can attend each workshop. So we have upped that. So we are actually able to service more people throughout the year, just with the less actual workshops. We did do virtual member meetings and workshops during the pandemic. We did do offsite group member information presentations pre-COVID, obviously. The CICERA overview was created as a video and put on our website. And the pension calculator tutorial was also created. And that's on our website with the calculator to show them how to use that. And we did do the creation of electronic files once the pandemic hit. We created everything switched over to electronic files rather than having paper files at our desk, and the acceptance of the electronic forms and requests was updated as well.
Okay, that's some future enhancements related to the new pension administration system. First one, I'm going to say this one is, kind of right in what Scott was asking about, is a member self-service portal that will provide the member with the functionality to calculate estimates on their own. And again, it would be with their unique information. So it would already know what tier they're in. It would know their service, as well as estimate their calculate their final average salary based upon what's in the system. The employer and payroll information with contribution, service, compensation will be validated and approved at the system level, ensuring accurate information for retirement and estimate calculations. Members will have the ability to complete a retirement application online and submit required documents electronically. The member will have the ability to update information directly into the system rather than completing and submitting a form to CICERA. We make probably on average a couple of hundred data changes prior to each monthly payroll process, with, it's address changes, direct deposit information, tax withholding, all time. I mean, it's at this point, the form comes in and a staff member acts on it. Some of these items will be available to the retiree to handle on their own from the portal. And it will be at CICERA's option on what is turned on and what they can actually do directly themselves in the system, or what type of audit control CICERA would put in place to ensure the information being put in is being put in by the member, whether it's sending out a confirmation letter or something. I think you probably have seen some emails you get on someone went into the account, your account, and did something. If it was you, great. If not, contact us. The system, another big one is, and this is, in some cases, it doesn't sound like a real big deal, but it is internally a big deal. And that is, the system will allow a member to model their tax withholding election and the impact to their benefit without us having to do it. The current process is very cumbersome. A member wants to know, if I go from 3 exemptions to 5 exemptions, what kind of impact does it have? Or I want to get my monthly deduction to $1,000 for federal taxes. Currently, a counselor goes into CPAS to that individual and starts changing their tax elections internally within the system to come up with a calculation for the next check. At that point, you're actually working with the member's actual account. The counselor then has to remember that they have to go back and reset the tax elections to where they were prior to the conversation started. The staff is very good on catching those and avoiding, the errors or implementing them. But it's again huge time saver for the staff, just because the current process does not have a kind of next check, next withholding logic built into it, or a what if logic. It also, the new system will allow the option for members to receive information directly, you know, and that could include the direct deposit advice statements that we send out each month. You know, we have about 10,000 members on payroll each month. 9,700, 9,800 of those are on direct deposit. We send a statement, we mail a statement to them every month to the address provided to notify them of the deposit. This would provide them with the opportunity to say, I want to get the information electronically rather than be it mailing the form to me. I mean, again, we'll save on postage, paper, and time. As well as the system will automatically have the ability to generate member communications and letters, various ones, such some a lot of the ones we were talking about, like documents missing, we need a birth certificate. The system, rather than where it's currently, the retiree counselor goes and prepares the letter off of a template, the system will have types of standard letters built into it so they can automatically be sent. And it could be, you know, a similar one could be somebody moves from California to Nevada and notify them that they need to change their California state tax withholding. That was our presentation. If you have any additional questions, we welcome them. I mean,
just a quick observation. I didn't realize this was an excellent presentation, really good stuff. But I almost didn't realize that there's going to have to be such a big section for divorce. I think you would start with a cover page that says divorced, yes, no. Considering divorce, yes, no. Asking for a friend.
We get those questions.
I bet you do.
Yeah, we do get questions similar to that. What if, and what does it mean to me? You know, it's a lot of different variations. The team, as Gail pointed out, does a great job. They're committed. The last 2 years through the pandemic has been a challenge. I mean, we had to change our complete work processes with the support of the admin team and with IT. You know, the 2 years have been very successful. The team has delivered. But we know there are things we want to work on and improve, and we're putting those in place. And again, we're not waiting for the new system to do that because, you know, it's not going to be here in 2022. So we've got to take action and make changes now to the best of our ability to serve our members.
Yeah. Well, something tells me that during the pandemic period, the consideration of divorce instances has gone up. That's just a guess.
We know just to clear that out.
We know retirement applications have.
Yeah. The great resignation plus divorces. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Any other questions or comments for Tim or Bree? Very, very great presentation. Very, very helpful, informative. Thank you. I'm not seeing any other hands, so thank you both. Fascinating stuff.
Thank you.
Keep at it.
I'm just sorry we took them away from the phones for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. I was feeling kind of guilty. I felt kind of guilty.
You know, this was very valuable. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes.
And, you know, hopefully we'll go through this again. We'll have, you know, a new system in place and a lot of items that we talked about that are currently manual or require staff intervention will be at the fingertips of all of our members.
That's the idea. That's the goal. Outstanding. Well, thank you, Tim. Thank you, Bree.
Thanks.
Thank you.